U.S. businesses thrive on Alibaba's online marketplace, where sales by American companies to Chinese consumers added $53 billion to the U.S. economy in 2022. Discover more at AlibabaPowersBusinesses.com.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
President Biden's COVID-19 vaccine mandate takes a step forward as Texas Governor Greg Abbott issues an executive order trying to countermand it. Welcome, I'm Kyle Peterson with the Wall Street Journal. We're joined today by my colleagues, WSJ columnists Bill McGurn and Kim Strassel. More than a month has passed since President Biden announced that OSHA, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, would be creating an emergency rule covering employers with 100 or more workers, essentially requiring them to be vaccinated for COVID-19 or to test negative once per week. And the White House said this would cover around 80 million Americans. Since then, the question has been, where is it? Where is the rule? Where is the mandate? But Bill, that wait, it seems it will soon be over. On Tuesday, the Labor Department said it had sent the proposal over to the White House for final review. So what do we know and what don't we know about what the details will look like?
Well, there's a lot we don't know. We don't know whether it's legal to start with. What they're doing is taking advantage of an expedited process to get this through. You know, I don't think the emergency powers was designed for this. We'll find out. There's going to be a lot of court challenges, and some of the state attorney generals have already challenge it. I also think, just to go back to the fundamentals, it's an odd time to be putting this in. When the president announced this back in September, you know, the new cases were a lot more than they are today. I think they've dropped. I think the peak was something like 184,000 in early September, and it was down to 85,000. That's less than half just 2 days ago. So it's an odd time to be doing this. And I think it's going to have the opposite effect intended. It's going to keep people, instead of encouraging them to return to work, it's going to keep people from going into work. I think it's going to be really awkward to enforce and so forth. So I think he might have the courts do him a favor if they throw it out, because I think it's going to do a lot of damage.
Bill raises the trend line on the COVID cases, which is a good point here. When Biden announced it, it was near a peak September 9th. We can now say in retrospect was near a peak, and it's fallen a lot since then. And the curve still looks like it's going down at about a 45 degree angle on the Centers for Disease Control's chart. And so who knows what will happen? We could get another COVID variant. But Kim, I think that Bill's right here, that the people who are going to end up challenging this in court, when they file those court papers in the coming weeks, maybe the COVID case number will be even lower. And what they're going to say is that the threat to the workplace has essentially dropped by a huge amount.
Yeah, and they're going to say a lot more than that. And the biggest threat comes from these 24 attorney generals out in states that have already sent a letter saying that they intend to challenge this just as soon as the rule gets out. And they should feel pretty optimistic. And I think this is one of the things that's been surprising, is that everyone just expected this will come and that they need to comply, when in fact the legality of this order is really very much in doubt just on the face of it. If you look at this procedure that the Department of Labor via OSHA is using, it's this rarely used emergency temporary standard provision. And a Congressional Research Service document notes that it's only been used once since 1983. And by the way, that was in June of this year, and it's being challenged. Prior to that, from 1971 to 1983, OSHA used it 9 times. 6 of those were challenged in court, and only 1 was upheld fully. And one of the reasons is because you're short-circuiting a process that's meant to take years when you go through a regular rulemaking process. And instead, they are doing this in little more than a month. courts tend to look at that very skeptically. Then you can look at the actual language from the OSHA law that they're using as a basis from this, which, and I'll read it, it says that you can use it when there is a, quote, grave danger from exposure to substances or agents determined to be toxic or physically harmful or from new hazards. And if you just look at the words in that, and again, courts are in the business of looking closely at language, substances or agents, it's very clear from other parts of the law that's supposed to be a reference to things that you encounter in the workplace that are actual substances and agents like chemicals or tools that workers use. It's also very much meant to be aimed at dangers in a workplace, not dangers that you encounter in the world generally. So there's the kind of language part. But then there's a whole bunch of constitutional issues here too, like the intrusion on state authority, which is usually the entity that is tasked with health and safety, not the federal government. And the fact that normally, and this was recently underlined when the Supreme Court threw out the administration's moratorium eviction, that when you are taking an action that is so sweeping in nature, you need Congress to speak very clearly on this issue. And this is incredibly ambiguous by contrast. So I think there's going to be an enormous legal challenge to this. And I personally think it's very doubtful that it sticks.
I'll add to that with a couple points raised by these 24 states who sent a September letter essentially threatening to sue if the Biden administration moved forward with this. Here's one of the lines they say, while grave danger is left undefined, your own statements during the announcement that those who are vaccinated have little chance of hospitalization or death undercut any assertion that there is grave danger. They also point out that this is no longer really a new hazard. It's now endemic. This virus is now endemic. It's floating around in the world, in workplaces, outside of workplaces. And so if the OSHA can mandate a vaccine against this, can they mandate a vaccine against the flu virus to protect you from flu transmission in the workplace? And so, Bill, I mean, part of what will shape these legal challenges is the details of the mandate, which are still unclear as well. The question I keep asking myself is, what if you have 100 employees, but they are all working from home permanently? You run a call center business, for example, where all of your employees are sitting at home with their phones and their laptops taking customer service calls. I mean, can OSHA mandate vaccines for your employees at your workplace when you literally don't have a physical workplace?
Well, look, that's the problem with the one-size-fits-all rule and not going through, as Kim says, the process. It's usually a year kind of long process where the public gets to make comments and so forth. So much of what this administration and this Congress seem to be doing seems to do the most controversial and biggest things through sort of extraordinary means, you know, whether it's reconciliation to pass $3.5 trillion in taxes and spending, or whether it's this kind of mandate. I would recommend people read the Attorney General's letter for answer to some of your questions. They go into a lot of the detail about whether the federal government has the authority. They pointed out courts have not been friendly to these kind of claims. I think there have been six cases or something before the courts, and they've only totally upheld the federal government once in those among those six. But they also make a lot of practical observations about what they're trying to do. That the original purpose, the original thought, for example, was that when COVID receded, when Joe Biden was sworn in, the idea was COVID was on the downslide. And when it receded, the economy would just get stronger and stronger. It was already recovering as people went back to work. And he said he didn't really believe in mandates, but now we have a mandate, and I think it's going to discourage people to go back from work, put these burdens on employers that have to enforce it. We're already seeing, I mean, it's just absurd. The mandates are leading to nurses getting fired because they won't take the vaccination. This is, that's not good for the health system, but it's also not good for the economy. I think it's a discouragement to work. And I think it's a confusion. I think the Attorney General's also point out that the effect of the mandate is just increasing distrust of the government when we need to be encouraging people to get vaccinated. And it kind of feeds the idea that we need the vaccinations to protect people who are already vaccinated, when that's not true. It's just the opposite. The people who are already vaccinated have a pretty good protection. Even if they come down with COVID, it won't be as severe and probably not require hospitalization. So I don't understand the logic of what the Biden administration is doing. It's not surprising to me that, you know, that a progressive government comes in and immediately starts thinking in terms of mandates, despite what they said before.
Hang tight. We'll be right back. You're listening to Potomac Watch from The Wall Street Journal.
U.S. businesses thrive on Alibaba's online marketplace, where sales by American companies to Chinese consumers added $53 billion to the U.S. economy in 2022. Discover more at AlibabaPowersBusinesses.com.
From the opinion pages of The Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Welcome back. Another of these practical questions is the matter of enforcement. And there's an interesting NBC story that says OSHA had only about 862 inspectors in early 2020, according to data that NBC had. And then it goes on to say that the agency lost another 65 inspectors this year. And so, Kim, another of these questions about what the details of this mandate are going to look like are, how is it going to be enforced? What is the paperwork burden on businesses, employers going to be? And how is an agency with only 800 or so inspectors going to keep an eye on these 80 million workers that they're supposed to be overseeing vaccine mandates for?
Correct. And I've actually seen slightly different numbers, although they underline your broad point. I saw an NPR story saying that if you look at federal and state inspectors combined, they have about 1,850. But that still is just a ludicrous number of people meant to be policing, as you said, 80 million workers arrayed over 8 million work sites. Many of them, of course, smaller companies too. And this is also in addition to everything else OSHA is supposed to be watching for in terms of occupational safety. So it's a ludicrous idea. And I think it leads to another major potential problem of this, which is not going to be what the left said. The left argument will be, well, we just need to hire more inspectors. That's not going to solve it either. You would need an army to actually make sure that this was enforced. Rather, the problem is inevitably going to be unequal enforcement. When you have that few inspectors and such sweeping a rule, it's almost a guarantee that they're going to pick on, as it were, a couple of big companies, or, you know, go after a few folks to try to turn them into examples and ride on them in an attempt to send out a message and scare everybody else into the program. I think you're likely also to see, and I've seen stories already suggesting this, that they're going to rely on basically snitches, send out the word essentially for people to rat on each other's colleagues if they know that they're not vaccinated and that companies are not in compliance. You know, so as Bill was just saying, this is not necessarily a recipe for inspiring trust in government. It's also soon likely to be a recipe for breaking down workforces and turning coworkers against each other and making company floors even more toxic than they have been already in light of all of the kind of diversity and equity agenda that has roiled through businesses over the past couple of years.
Well, while we're still awaiting the final text of the rule and then awaiting whatever lawsuits are going to come, the biggest piece of pushback so far has been in Texas, where on Monday, Governor Greg Abbott signed an executive order aimed at essentially countermanding the Biden mandate. Here's a piece of the order. It says, no entity in Texas can compel receipt of a COVID-19 vaccine by any individual, including an employee or a consumer who objects to such vaccination for any reason of personal conscience based on a religious belief or for medical reasons, including prior recovery from COVID-19. Bill, what do you make of that? I mean, any reason of personal conscience seems like a pretty broad exemption. I mean, is this an appropriate way for Texas to try to push back, or is this going to get tangled up in the courts too? And the matter of federal law trumping state law.
Well, it is going to be decided by the courts, right? Because that is a question. Can the state law? But if the attorney generals are right from the states, the federal government does not have the authority to do this. Again, it just shows the acrimony that we invite and the bureaucracy. And as Kim said, we're going to have selective enforcement, which just increases cynicism because it's an impossible mandate. You can't enforce the whole thing. I mean, that's in some ways, that's our only hope, that the federal government is as bad at that as it's bad as everything else. It's not going to be able to enforce it. And it just increases. The more government you have, the more cynical people become about government because they see the only thing they have is force. So I think it's inevitable that this goes to the courts. And we're going to find out. I mean, the Biden administration has made very specific claims. I'm not actually sure they even care about this. I mean, if you look at the administration, I think their idea is to get through the moment, you know, with something political. And if they're overturned by the courts, you know, a few weeks or months down the line, everyone will forget. He'll have looked strong at one point. Plus, he could, you know, put the blame on the courts. So I don't see any good outcome in any way. I'm glad to see the states fighting back. I'm glad to see people challenging the constitutional origins of this order. And I think there's more of a role for Congress in authorizing this kind of authority by a federal bureaucracy, or there should be.
One thing I would add is that Governor Greg Abbott is not against the vaccines. He himself was vaccinated at a televised event, said it was safe and easy. He said, I'll never ask any Texan to do something that I'm not willing to do myself. So he's not against the COVID vaccines. He's trying to exert some state power here. But Kim, it does seem like it's putting businesses that are based in Texas or have locations in Texas between a rock and a hard place, because they have a federal mandate saying you have to have all your employees vaccinated or subject them to weekly testing. You have a state mandate saying you are not allowed to do that. Both of them, I think, are enforced with some kind of monetary fines, and businesses are going to have to choose. There's a statement from American Airlines, which is based in Fort Worth. They're saying, we believe the federal vaccine mandate supersedes any conflicting state laws. This does not change anything for American, but it looks like there's some legal risk either way.
Yeah, which only underlines that this is going to have to end up in a court and probably relatively quickly to get to the bottom of it. And one other thing that I would just point out is we need to also make some distinctions here. There's actually two different legal questions at play, because one is the question of federal versus state power and whether or not the federal government has the authority to enact such broad mandate at all. Those are the questions that the 24 state attorneys general are posing, and that will probably also be litigated by other outside players, including workers or even unions, who, by the way, don't particularly like these mandates because they seem to supersede union rules, which organized labor takes very, very seriously. But the other legal question, which is also interesting and important that the Texas order raises, is whether or not a private company, I mean, forget all of the federal mandates, forget any state mandates, but does a private company, in the absence of that and simply a vacuum, does it have the right to tell its workers that they have to be vaccinated to come to work or risk losing their job? And that may end up being separate litigation, because that's what the Abbott order also raises, is not just this question of the tussle between what state authority or federal authority has the right to put something in place, but whether or not a private company on its own is allowed to do so. And, you know, we have hundreds of years of case law and decisions about companies and their rights and what they can say their employees must do as a prerequisite to being employed. There are limits on those. I don't know what the answer is. You know, in many cases, I tend to think that, you know, companies should be able to have, for instance, a dress code, et cetera. But in the era and the realm of vaccines and mandates, this is somewhat uncharted territory, and one that also might be company specific, or, you know, in terms of if you're like maybe in a hospital setting and some certain areas, maybe you need to be vaccinated to do that. But do you really need to if you are, as you mentioned, Kyle, like a stay at home worker or a remote worker? So there's some really thorny litigation questions that are being raised here that could take a while to get sorted out.
Well, the point you bring up is the one I was going to raise next, and that's why I think both of these orders, the Texas one and the federal one from President Biden, are problematic because they're both very blunt instruments. One is saying every employer over that has 100 workers has to vaccinate everybody or test them. One is saying nobody's allowed to do that, and there are different employers that have different situations and even different classes of workers within one employer. I mean, if you're a big hospital chain, you probably have doctors and nurses that are working in surgery rooms, and maybe it really makes sense as an employer to say what we need to do for our patient safety is to have everybody in there vaccinated. Maybe the same employer has some people who are working from home in the call centers or in billing. And the problem, Bill, with both of these mandates, it seems to me, is they're trying to treat everybody the same instead of giving employers the freedom to figure out the needs of their customers and their workers.
Yeah, exactly right. Look, I'm pro-vaccine. I have my first two shots. As soon as I'm eligible for the booster, I'm going to get it. I'm actually sympathetic to the idea that private businesses have the right to set the rules for employment at their business. And part of it is because I think they know it better than anyone else from the outside. So if they're a hospital and they don't have people getting vaccinated, you know, that might hurt them. So they would decide. I'm inclined to leave it to them to set their own rules and so forth. But a sweeping mandate, as you said, that doesn't distinguish between people. What about people working from home? And so forth, I think is just counterproductive. I think mandates ought to be the very last instrument that we use to solve a problem and not the first, especially, you know, as we pointed out earlier, as cases are declining. And it all goes back to a question. Are we going to find a way? I think it's becoming more clear. We're never going to eradicate COVID-19, like down to zero or something. We're going to have to find a way to live with it. And that means assessing risks and having the nuances that you were talking about, making distinctions and so forth. And I generally think those should be made at the lowest possible level, back, you know, at the place of employment, rather than in Washington, D.C., inside OSHA.
But all of this is continuing to contribute to the strangeness in the economy. The Labor Department's latest report from Tuesday says there were 10.4 million job openings in April, which is down a little bit, excuse me, in August, which is down a little bit from July, but still close to a record. And yet labor participation isn't moving. People don't seem to be coming back into the workforce. And then here's an interesting statistic too. The number of quits increased in August to 4.3 million. The quits rate increased to a series high of 2.9%. And so, Kim, I mean, how do you make sense of all of these economic numbers that don't seem to quite jive with the way we're supposed to be thinking about a recovery?
I think it's a couple of things, and it all comes back to the federal government. One is obviously these mandates. And we're seeing reports now coming out of workers that are either doing mild protests, which are snarling supply lines and supply chains, or outright quitting rather than having to follow these directives. Everybody was watching this past weekend the debacle with Southwest Airlines, where a whole bunch of its flights were delayed or canceled. The airline came out and said, oh, nothing to do with our recently announced mandate for vaccinations. But you've had employees, in particular, there was a pilot who spoke anonymously who said that, in fact, what was in part behind this were pilots who decided it wasn't coordinated. It wasn't like a coordinated sick out or strike, but just, you know, on their own volition decided that they were going to use up their sick days, or they weren't going to take those overtime hours that were necessary to keep some of these flights going, because Southwest is still trying to hire a bunch of new employees. So they're a little understaffed at the moment. They've been relying on the good grace of some of their pilots to simply sign up for these extra flights. And when they don't do it, there's a bit of a mess. So you've got that on the one side. And then on the other side, you have a federal government that has just been throwing cash at households for the last year and a half. And everyone was focused, for instance, on those enhanced unemployment benefits that the federal government was giving. And they thought that perhaps when those expired, things would get a little better. But actually, if you look at the broad continuum, there's all kinds of money that's flowing out in different ways, whether it be this new child tax credit, which was upped and is now being sent out on a monthly basis to households, or whether it's the expansion of different food stamp or welfare provisions or rental assistance or whatever it is. There's money absolutely flowing at Americans, and that is discouraging a lot of people from going out and taking these very important jobs that might not be the most high paying in the economy, but we are nonetheless seeing are absolutely vital to making an economy work.
Thank you, Kim. Thank you, Bill. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back later this week with another edition of Potomac Watch.
U.S. businesses thrive on Alibaba's online marketplace, where sales by American companies to Chinese consumers added $53 billion to the U.S. economy in 2022. Discover more at AlibabaPowersBusinesses.com.